Hello there, and welcome along to this racing postcast. It is Monday, the 27th of September. I'm Maddie Playell. I'm back from a short break. Thank you to various people for holding out for me. And this week I'm joined again by Chris Cook and Tom Collins to look back on a crackerjack weekend at Newmarket. It was the Cambridgeshire Festival. We had such a brilliant day on Saturday, including excellent Group 1 wins from Tenebrism in Perfect Power in the Cheveley Park and the Middle Park, also a dramatic Royal Lodge. So we're going to start off with those juveniles before we branch out to the new Derby favourite, Luxembourg, and indeed the Cambridgeshire winner, Bedouin Story himself, for Jamie Spencer and Saeed Bin Saror. And of course, stay tuned for later on in the show when we talk about the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, this week's highlight, which is looking like it's going to be an absolute cracker, one of the deepest renewals we've seen for many, many years. Without further ado, let's go on in to talk about the Royal Lodge first then. And this sort of set the tone for a dramatic, a thrilling weekend. Royal Patronage got the better of Caribus in a real thrilling finish for Jason Hart and Mark Johnston. The Godolphin colt traded at 101 on Betfair and in the final furlong looked all over the winner, only to tire in the closing stages. Do you think Royal Patronage was a lucky winner, Tom? Because I must admit, I backed him and I think he's one of the most fortunate winners I've had in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think lucky is the word, but certainly he shouldn't have won the race. I think Caribus obviously was the best horse in the race. He traded at 101, as you mentioned. 33,000, gobbed at 101. Not a race for in-running punters whatsoever, unless you were on the winner at big prices, actually. Caribus is clearly a very talented colt, best horse in the race. I think William Buett would love to have that race back because he just went for home too soon on a horse who's still very raw and he just couldn't sustain his effort. That was proven by a closing furlong in a pedestrian 13.11 seconds. Look, take nothing away from Royal Patronage. He won the Acom. He beat some good horses that day at York, including Eraz, who finished lame and is one to follow for next time. And he was very professional again for Mark Johnson here to run down Caribus. But the race was all about the runner-up, wasn't it?
Yeah, the market agrees with you. Caribus 16-1 for the 2,000 guineas next year. Royal Patronage 20-1. Chris, I thought this was an interesting ride from Jason Hart because as William Buick swept past, he sort of wasn't too concerned. Maybe he was as the race developed, but I thought that was the key moment in this.
Yeah, you know, I had exactly that thought. He was remarkably cool. Perhaps part of that is the knowledge that his horse was going as fast as he possibly could, and there's nothing he could do about it. But I thought there was a sort of flying change of legs from Royal Patronage when maybe the horse is clocked that the one in front of him is sort of dying on his bum, and he sort of got the bit between his teeth and actually made an effort. I thought I saw that also in the finish of the Cheveley Park. It's interesting when you get that sense that a horse has got this sort of spirit of attack in the closing stages when, you know, it's like he senses blood and there's a chance to reel in the leader. It was a really brave performance by Royal Patronage. He wouldn't be as quick as Caribus, obviously. But it's interesting to hear the suggestion from Charlie Appleby that Caribus is actually his sort of best prospect for next year. You know, even though we were all sort of getting very excited about his national stakes winner, whose name is that's the one. When you get as old as me, Maddie, you'll find these names don't come as readily to mind. So yeah, I mean, Caribus is very exciting. To put in an effort like that and only a second run, you know, it's and he's bred to need time and distance. He comes from one of those great Godolphin families. The dam was sort of a half sister to Thunder Snow and Itamal and Always Smile and others. You know, it's a really high performing family, and I think 16-1 for the guineas is not bad.
Not bad, Chris Cook says about Caribus for next year's classic. You talk about Charlie Appleby, and he's got an embarrassment of riches at the moment, hasn't he? Native Trail, Caribus, so many other top horses. We're going to talk about his dual hand in the arc a bit later on. Let's move on to the Cheveley Park then. It was won in sensational style by Tenebrism for Ryan Moore, Aidan O'Brien, and again I think the ride deserves plenty of credit here. Patient after this horse had had such a big layoff, Ryan Moore didn't hurry her and she came flying up the stand side rail to win in the closing stages. Interestingly, she received a higher Racing Post rating than Perfect Power did. And the last horse to do that, last filly to do that in the Cheveley Park was Natagora, the subsequent Guineas winner in 2007. Now, I think this was a monstrous performance given all those factors I mentioned. How highly do you rank it, Chris, among recent Cheveley Park winners?
Well, that's not quite the way I was sort of thinking of her performance. I think, you know, she'd be less experienced than most of them, just running through those recent winners on the top of my head. She's got to have been disadvantaged, hasn't she, by the fact that her first run was back in March and, you know, she's had a problem since, and this is her first run back. And we had been kind of thinking that, you know, those Ballydoyle two-year-olds weren't doing a great deal for much of the year, but it's now suddenly it's, you know, they're on fire, aren't they? I mean, I think Aidan had like a dozen winners for the previous fortnight, and like 10 of them are two-year-olds. So, you know, that was it was a really impressive effort, and she's one to take seriously for next year. That being said, I'm not sure she'd have got there if Flotus had stuck on that near side rail. I mean, she's just got tired, hasn't she? And despite James Doyle's best efforts, she sort of wandered out to the middle of the track. And you can almost see, you know, Tenebrism going, oh, OK, let's go. There's something for me to aim at here. And she sort of charges forward and reels her in. If she has to go around Flotus onto the sort of ground, which is not, you know, the ideal racing surface compared to what's on the rail, I think you probably have a different result. But, you know, anyway, two talented fillies and Tenebrism the one to take forward, obviously. I think Sandrine deserves a bit of credit for running well, sort of more out towards the middle of the track. You know, I think apart from her, the first three home would have been 11, 13 and 12 from their draws. There was a real advantage, I think, to being hard against that near side rail.
That's something we're going to talk a little bit more when we get to the Cambridgeshire man, also in Perfect Power's case, given where he came from. But talking about Tenebrism, Tom, she's by a Commonwealth Cup winning Caravaggio. Obviously, we hadn't seen her in that amount of time, but where would you be aiming with her, the Guineas or the Commonwealth Cup?
Definitely the Guineas. I think the 1,000 Guineas is the perfect place for Tenebrism. Aidan O'Brien mentioned in the aftermath of the Cheveley Park victory that they could go to the Breeders' Cup juvenile turf. I don't think that turf sprint, sorry. I don't think that should be the aim for Tenebrism. I think stamina's her forte, despite being by Caravaggio. Obviously, she has plenty of speed. But we only saw her hit her full stride in the final furlong there to run down Flotus. I'm glad that Chris has touched on the fact that, one, there's a moving walkway. You know, like at the airport where some people walk on that little conveyor belt thing? That's what the nearside rail at Newmarket's like, isn't it? It's ridiculous. But yeah, I think the best horse finished second. Again, much like in the Royal Lodge with Caribus, I thought the best horse on the day was Flotus. I'm going to touch on the splits and the sectionals in a minute when we talk about Perfect Power in the Middle Park. And a comparison there, but Flotus ran a great race from the front. The pace collapsed apart from her, who sustained her effort throughout. I thought that was a really good run, and if Flotus goes to the Breeders' Cup juvenile turf sprint, I think she's going to have a great chance. Her natural speed is mouthwatering. She's been a different filly since they've allowed her to go to the front on quick ground. Previously, they were holding her up and trying to hope that she would come through the field, but that's not how she needs to race. They've realised that now. She was blistering at Ripon from the front. She was really good again in the Cheveley Park. I think she was the best horse in the race. If they go to Del Mar, she'll probably feature in my Breeders' Cup Pricewise staking plan.
Of course, she's named for best in the US, isn't she?
Exactly.
There
we are then. So maybe we'll see Flotus stateside next. Tenebrism, we've got to give Chris a shout because on last week's podcast, he gave it a good talking up with David Jennings. 8-1 for the 1,000 Guineas, if you're interested. But sounds like some notes of caution there from our panel. Let's go on to Perfect Power, because I know Tom's going to get really excited talking about this colt and what he did in the Middle Park. It was just a great afternoon of racing altogether, and this was one of the highlights, I'd say. Why do you have so much belief in this horse, Tom?
Oh, I just love this horse. I love this horse, Maddie. What a brilliant animal he is, Perfect Power. You know what? I haven't been taken by a horse in the UK for a few years. Like, actually love them, apart from Stradivarius, but, you know, my affinity with him developed a few years ago. I just love Perfect Power. I don't know why. And it's not even from the first start. I wasn't even taken by him when he won in the Norfolk, because I thought he had the track bias at Royal Ascot. That played a huge part. but it was the Richmond effort when he finished fifth or seventh behind Asymmetric that really made me believe he was potentially the best two-year-old sprinter in training. Nothing went right for him. He was beaten out just a length. And he just, I think you can learn plenty from the finish line to when the horses pull up. Paul Hannigan could not pull Perfect Power up that day at Goodwood. He was just reefing in behind runners. He just didn't want to stop running. And I love to see that. He proved that he was exceptional in the morning. And this middle park, I think, proved that again. Now, I just pray that Richard Fahey goes to the Commonwealth Cup next year and not the 2,000 guineas. I know there are quotes, 8-1 from 16, I believe, for the 2,000 guineas. But to me, he's an out-and-out sprinter. Now, let's get to the analysis, because I know all on social media, and I'm going to defend Perfect Power here. On social media, there was a lot of clock watching and the times. The middle park wasn't as quick as the Cheveley Park. That's been well documented. There was 0.32 seconds between the two winners, Tenebrism and Perfect Power, or two lengths in comparison. The opening furlong in the middle park, won by Perfect Power, was two lengths slower than the Cheveley Park. Flotus went forward at a good pace in the Cheveley Park, 13.97 seconds, 14.11 for Twilight Jet in the middle park. So there's your two length difference at the start, right? Saying that, Flotus, who went a quicker pace in the Cheveley Park, actually sustained her effort throughout, whereas Twilight Jet, who didn't go as quick, couldn't sustain his effort. The pace collapsed in the middle park. Also, Perfect Power raced seven off the favoured rail, the moving walkway, as we've been mentioning. That is, you've got to mark him up for that effort. You don't want to be in the middle of the track. We've seen that over the course of the few days, and actually all season at Newmarket as well. And he was drawn in the worst possible gate in gate one. It was a huge effort. He changed leads three times in the closing stages, much like he did in the Richmond when he, you know, everything went wrong. He should have won his last five races. I think Perfect Power is an exceptional two-year-old.
Strong words from Tom there. Let's talk about his future targets, Chris. Fahey's saying we'll give him every chance to be a 2,000 guineas horse. That's not good news for Tom. But he is a son of our dad, who was a Flying Childers winner and all speed. Didn't really pull up any trees as a three-year-old. So pedigree says sprinter, but trainer obviously wants to go for the classic. The last horse to win the 2,000 guineas off the back of the middle park was Rodrigo de Triano in 1991 and 92. So it's not been done in an awfully long time. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, my instinct is that a horse that's gathered the profile that he has this year is never going to be much of a value price for anything in the following year. And as you say, you know, first crop of Ardad, we don't yet know, you know, what the tendency is going to be. Are those going to be horses that train on? I would tend to suspect that he may have peaked already. And, you know, that's not being disparaging at all. He's had a fantastic season, and it's a great thing to be a top juvenile. Lots of winners out there would love to have a horse like him. But, you know, from a betting perspective, I should be looking to take him on next year. And, you know, if he can sort of sustain his ability and his speed as far as the Commonwealth Cup, then good for him. You know, if he turns out to be a guineas horse, then that's going to be a serious training performance, as well as credit to the horse. I mean, maybe I need to just get over myself. I was on Project Dante back at Royal Ascot, who looked a little bit unlucky at the time and then has done nothing since in that after the Norfolk Stakes. So maybe I'm still, you know, subconsciously holding something against Perfect Power over that result.
We all carry these performances with us, don't we? And we change our views on them over time. I'll give you a chance to respond to Chris, Tom, about the 2,000 guineas. What about his physique? Do you think he can build on what he's shown this year? That would be a big ask, wouldn't it, against the more later maturing types?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you're going to have to take a risk that he does train on. This is, you know, this is what we always discuss over the winter. Flat racing enthusiasts discuss whether two-year-olds train on, three-year-olds train on, etc. You don't actually know. We won't find out until next year. But to me, I know he was a breeze-up purchase, which usually suggests that he'll be peaking at in his two-year-old season. But he's just not the finished article just yet. Everything's gone wrong for him this year. He should have won his last five races. If he was coming here and won the middle park, as a fight with five consecutive victories for a trainer, I don't know, Aidan O'Brien, what price would he be? He'd be a short price favourite for the guineas next year. I don't think they should go to the guineas, as I've mentioned. This is my public plea to get Richard Fahey to go to the Commonwealth Cup. But still, I think he's going to train on. He's only just managing to reach his two-year-old peak, 115 RPR for his middle park and his morning victories. I still think there's plenty of improvement there. You can see just by the fact that he changes leads so often when he's asked for any kind of effort that he's not the finished article just yet.
Okay, 12-1 best price for the 2,000 guineas, if that's what you're interested in. Tom, as I say, we'll be hoping he goes elsewhere. Let's pause, but after we do, we're going to talk about the new Derby favourite.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to the Monday Postcast, and let's talk Luxembourg now. You might have missed it given the action at Newmarket on Saturday, but we saw the new Derby favourite at the Curragh. He won the Beresford Stakes, giving Aidan O'Brien a 21st win in the race. Ironically, though, last horse to win that and then go on to win the Derby was See the Stars in 2008. Shamie Heffernan was on board, given that Ryan Moore was at Newmarket, and this horse is now the 8-1 favourite for Epsom next year. What were your first impressions on this horse, Chris? Because we'd only seen him previously in a Killarney Maiden, and that was a while ago, but he seems to have a lot of staying power, and Shamie Heffernan was very complimentary in his quotes afterwards.
Yeah, he really was, and I wouldn't just put this down to staying power. I mean, obviously a mile is pretty far for a two-year-old in September, but I mean, I think he had plenty of boot as well on what we saw on Saturday, and you know, although you're instinctively thinking Derby, I think Aidan was careful to leave in the guineas as a possibility. He thinks this horse has got plenty of class, as far as I can tell, and he's by Camelot too, obviously, won both of those races. He's got a funny way of racing. I mean, there's a sort of a bit of a head carriage in there. That sort of makes you wonder if there's some Montja temperament showing up in him, which would be no bad thing necessarily. And he really went past them quickly and with a degree of ease when Shamie asks him, and he's running about a little bit as I watch the replay. But he's got a lovely big stride when he opens up. You wouldn't know where the ceiling of his ability would be, as we always find ourselves saying in these occasions, but I think he's really exciting. And I think, you know, even now he may be underestimated in the market for races like the Guineas, where I suppose people are still assuming that Point Lonsdale is the number one for Ballydoyle. But I don't think it's necessarily so. I mean, it's interesting to me the horses that Aidan sends to the Beresford. And that's why, you know, Luxembourg would have been interesting even before this race was run on Saturday, is that, you know, I think he's nearly using it for some of his most exciting prospects. You know, you look at the last 5 years, that includes horses that went on to be better again, like Japan and Capri, and obviously High Definition became disappointing, but at the time that he won the Beresford, you know, he was supposed to be the next big thing. So I think Luxembourg has got a serious future.
And those were the Westerberg silks we once again saw in the winner's enclosure, like with Tenebrism, also owning this horse in partnership with the Coolmore Partners. Now, the form probably wasn't a lot to shout about. That would be my one, perhaps, quibble. But you can get 16-1 for the 2,000 guineas, and I think that would be my bet in the race at this stage. Tom, what did you think of Luxembourg?
Well, at 2:33 p.m., I just had to look back on Twitter to see what time it was. I tweeted, Luxembourg is the best horse we've seen so far today. And that was after Tenebrism won. Caribus ran, obviously. I think Luxembourg's really exciting. Obviously, 21 Beresford's now for Aidan O'Brien. Phenomenal record. Won the last 11. As Chris mentioned, there has been a couple of duds in there. High Definition being one. Everyone thought this time last year that he was going to be the Guineas and Derby winner. Didn't work out that way. So you have to bear that in mind when looking forward to future targets for Luxembourg, but I really do think he is the real deal. I just love the way he goes past the horses on the inside. Now, yes, you're right that he didn't beat much, did he? Because the form in behind Jim Bolger's horse finished second. I wouldn't say he's really a group horse, neither is 2-8 for Joe Lyons. But still, he quick and clear, like an exceptional two-year-old, a back-end two-year-old. He's clearly still learning, high head carriage. He raced early, like he didn't really know what he was supposed to do in behind cover and whatnot. But I think he's going to go forward, unlike High Definition. He's a big scopey type, clearly not all there mentally. By Camelot is going to improve for the step up and trip too. So Luxembourg, I think the second most exciting horse behind Perfect Power run on Saturday.
Dewhurst or Vertem Futurity next for him?
Ooh, I don't know. I'd probably go Vertem Futurity, but I think he'd have a good chance in either. And Aidan O'Brien last year with High Definition didn't run him in one of those races, did he? He sat him out after.
That's what I was thinking. It wouldn't surprise you at all with a horse like this if you just put him away now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Okay. Do you think that would be best for his development, Chris? As you say, if he has got a little bit of that temperament.
Well, Aidan's trained more Derby winners than me, so I'll be backing him to make the right decision on that one. I mean, obviously, another race is going to help the horse in terms of his education, but equally, if he's just not ready to go again, you don't want to give him a bad experience. So, I'll take what happens, either way, I think, he's a big name for next year's major races.
Given what the trainer's done in the past, I'd say Doncaster's probably a slightly shorter price, but I'd love to see how he'd handle those undulations at Newmarket, given that I am talking up that price for the 2,000 guineas. Go on, Chris.
Just before we get off, the Beresford winner of recent years that I didn't mention was obviously Saxon Warrior, who did go on to win the guineas. Despite, I think, he wasn't necessarily the one that people were maybe expecting over the winter to be the Balladol guineas horse. So, yeah, some significance there.
Certainly, and we'll see how the Ballydoor pecking order changes and ebbs and flows in the coming months, I suppose. On to the Cambridge Chanel back at Newmarket and that brilliant standside walkway that we've been calling it throughout this podcast was chosen by Jamie Spencer as the place to be on Bedouin Story, and it paid off. The six-year-old gelding won the race from the big gamble, Ann Martz, who was halved in price on the morning of the race. He was just denied. But the first question I want to ask about this one is, why were there so many non-runners, Chris?
Ground was the formal reason given, I think, for most of them, maybe all of them. It was real quick, wasn't it, at Newmarket on Saturday. And I guess, some of those horses had other races coming in, maybe they didn't fancy their chances any too much. Maybe, between ourselves, they might not have been drawn perfectly. It's slightly disappointing, but I mean, then again, there's a prize money issue as well, isn't there? I think because of the way they've reordered the prize money distribution, the winner was getting a little bit less than last year. So first place prize money for the Cambridgeshire, $61,000, which is certainly worth having, but it's down on what the race has been in recent years, so maybe it didn't have quite the same compelling nature as a target as it would have done 2 or 3 years ago. I dare say it, $61,000 won't make much difference to Godolphin, who've managed to win the race.
Do you think that's going to be reflected in the quality of future fields? I think some people would be keen to say, well, this perhaps wasn't the best running of the Cambridgeshire we've had in recent years. Do you think that's fair?
It's possible. I mean, there's a stack of horses in there, aren't there? Including some that definitely had a day like this in them. If everything fell right, at the end of the day, it's a handicap, and the horse who's best suited by the prevailing conditions and happens to maybe a few pounds in hand on the right day comes through. I mean, that's Bedouin Story's situation. I mean, he's a six-year-old horse who sort of. He must have been so frustrating because you go back through his form and there's flashes of promise there. And I would guess that Saeed has known for a long time that he's got a really big day in him, but it's taken until now. And I think, in group races, they don't go strong enough pace for him, for that finishing kick to make the difference. But in a big field like Saturday and on fast ground, which I think is also important to him, and with Jamie Spencer aboard, what I think was the first time, it's like they've caught lightning in a bottle. Everything's come right at once, and he's got a clear run through, which wouldn't be guaranteed for a horse with his run style, and it's worked out. And I mean, it must have been foreseeable to some extent because I heard Chris Dixon give him a good mention before the race. But 40-1 suggests that not too many people saw that result coming. I would think that connections of Anmat would be. Feeling pretty cheesed off that they've run into Bedouin Story on the one day that it finally came right.
Indeed. Talking of Saeed Bin Sarur, he, of course, won the Joel Stakes with good old Ben Battle on the Friday. His horse is really running into form, as they often do in the autumn. But I know Tom's going to touch on this. So let's just talk about the draw a bit more. Of the top nine, we had 21, 22, 19, 4 for Zosimus, who was in fourth. I think we need to mark him up a little bit. Then 14th for Fastnet Crown, who was isolated somewhat out in the middle. 30 for Uncle Bryn, 12 Marie's Diamond, 37 Long Tradition, and 33 Naval Commander. That's a fair bias, don't you think, Tom? Or do you think they were just the best horses anyway?
No, it's a bias. Standside Rail is always a bias at Newmarket. I just think you have to look for the high draws. As you mentioned, Zosimus can be marked up. 100 to 1 shot, massive career best. Finished fourth and only a three-year-old. That was a really good run from Donico O'Brien's charge. But Jamie Spencer on Betterman Story, wow. That's two Saturdays in a row that Jamie's produced classic rides. On your beer in the Jockey Club Derby at Belmont last Saturday, and obviously Betterman Story in the Cambridgeshire. Everyone who always mocks Jamie on Twitter or whatnot for his hold-up rides, they don't always come off. They're never always going to come off. Just look how brilliant he is. He's a top rider. I chucked a few quid on Saeed Bin Sarur's other two runners, so I'm a bit gutted. Long Tradition and Royal Marine, but still, Betterman Story ran very well. He's always given hope that he can win a big handicap off a mark of the low hundreds. He was placed in group company in Maidan, so he's always had the talent. But I think this race again is going to be a race where we're going to talk about the second more, Anmar, because punters were right with the gamble. They were absolutely right. This was the best horse in the race, three-year-old. He got to the front plenty soon enough, only to be beaten by a brilliant ride by Jamie, last to first. I think he's a group horse in the making. Three races at Newmarket where I think the runner-up was the best horse in the race. Flotus, Anmar and Coroebus.
Okay, so Tom's thinking that you should definitely keep your eye out for the second place horses at Newmarket on Saturday. Chris, who was your number one to take out the Cambridgeshire? It's got to be Anmar, hasn't it?
Well, I suppose so. Although, you know, he's getting the weight for age, isn't he? And I mean, he's ended up 11-2, which maybe he's only beaten three parts of a length. Maybe you could still say it with value. I wouldn't expect that he'd be much of a price wherever he turns up for the next three or four races, you know, because he's very firmly lodged in the public mind as a talented animal.
Okay, so we'll wait eagerly to see where Bedouin Story and Anmar go next. Where we're going to be looking next, well, that's, of course, the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe on Sunday at Longchamp. Stick with us because we're going to analyse the race in great detail.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m. Plus, exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
The latest stage of the forfeits for Sunday's Qatar Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe took place this morning. I'll run you through them. Please bear in mind those Snowfall and Adyar are to be supplemented for the Mannhof showcase event on Sunday. Torquato Tasso, not sure if I'm pronouncing that one correctly, for Germany. We have Deep Bond, Broom, Tanawa, Love, Rabbi Hat, Chrono Genesis, Mojo Star, Baby Rider, Hurricane Lane, Sealyway, Alan Kerr, Bubble Gift and Tiona, as well as both Snowfall and Adyar, as I said previously. Let's talk about Adyar first off. What are you thinking with regards to his chances after the setback, Chris? Would that worry you a lot coming into a race like this, or do you trust that Charlie Appleby can get him there in tip-top shape?
I would tend to trust him, and you know, unless he's getting lots of excuses in early. I mean, I'm certainly expecting to see the real Adyar this weekend, but maybe you guys can talk me out of that. And I think he'll be a really serious runner. I mean, you know, obviously that sort of goes without saying, doesn't it? But you know, I see analysts who are sort of preferring Hurricane Lane, and you know, I find that quite hard to sort of to get on board with. I mean, obviously two really talented animals, but Hurricane Lane's coming off a St. Ledger race where, you know, he's put an awful lot of effort into that, hasn't even finished visibly tired. Whereas, you know, Adair's had the break since the summer, which is sort of classic French style preparation, really. And you know, he's run to 1.29 that day at Ascot in the King George, judging him on Racing Post ratings. You know, beating Mishriff in that contest is a really serious piece of form. I think that, you know, that probably makes him the one to beat.
Okay, he's not quite favourite though, but strong support in recent days.
He's challenging Tarnawa, isn't he? I think he'll get there in a day or two.
Yeah, certainly. I'll run you through that betting now. Tarnawa 5-2, Adyar 11-4, Snowfall, who was beaten in the Prix Vermeil, 11-2, Hurricane Lane 6-1, Chronogenesis 10-1, and 25-1 bar. Tarnawa, after her run in the Irish Champion Stakes, how unlucky do you think she was there, TC, looking back?
She was pretty unlucky. She was obviously carried across the track by St Mark's Basilica. I don't think she was the best horse in the race that day anyway. I think the best horse did win, and therefore the stewards were right to keep the result, in my opinion. She has a great chance in the arc. Dermot Weld's a brilliant trainer. She's had a light campaign. We saw last year in the Breeders' Cup just how brilliant she is. I think she shouldn't be favourite, though. I'm with Chris. I think Adyar should be favourite. And actually, in a race like the Arc, where you're never going to get that much value because the market's been out for months, true Group 1 performers, you know what you're going to get across the board, and the bookmakers tend to get it right. I think Adyar should be favourite around 9-4. There's a bit of value in there, half a point. I think he's the best middle distance horse this year, without question. And I'd be willing to take him against the field, despite the fact he's a reasonably short price in the Arc.
Two of our pundits very confident then that Adyar can beat all of them, including his stablemate Hurricane Lane on Sunday. How do you think tactically this race is going to play out, Tom? Who do you see going forward? Who do you think tactics are going to be most important for? I think that'd be quite key for Adyar because he's a big, strong, imposing horse who seems to need quite a while to get himself organised. I think if he gets in behind, that's going to be difficult for William Buick to manage.
I'm not so convinced because he has the perfect mix of speed and stamina, and like his turn of foot, he proved it in the Derby. Like, you don't win a Derby without a turn of foot. He quick and well down that hill, scooted clear. We saw his ability to handle a small field in the King George when he beat Mishriff as well. And everyone's talking about this setback. I tweeted a few weeks ago about how Adyar should be favourite. I got so many replies saying he's had a setback. The setback was on right at the start of September. He got back into work on September the 7th, according to Charlie Appleby. Like, this, Adyar's had over 3 weeks of training since the minor setback. Like, there's no reason for that to dissuade you of backing Adyar here. Look, I don't know where the pace is going to come from. There are a couple of front runners in there, a couple of pacemakers maybe, but I don't think it will really matter to Adyar or Hurricane Lane or Tarnawa for that matter. They're all Snowfall. They're all horses that can go well off slow gallops, fast gallops. As long as they get a clear run, I think they'll all be fine.
And I know Scott Burton, our France correspondent, he's very keen on Chronogenesis, Royal Bond, Deep Bond rather, also running for Japan. Perhaps this isn't the year they're going to do it though, Chris. 10-1 and 20-1 respectively.
It would be just very exciting to have him in the field. And actually, you know, when I'm approaching one of these sort of Group 1 races, what I like to start with is you sort them into order by Racing Post rating. And Chronogenesis comes out top at the moment, so that's pretty interesting. The weather is going to be a thing, isn't it? It's always a thing for the Arc. It's sort of a mix of good and good soft ground at the moment, but there's rain forecast through the week, including quite a bit on Sunday. And the timing is going to be crucial because, it's a few days off at the moment. So the forecast, you wouldn't be too reliant on it. But at the moment, it's supposed to start tipping down about 2 o'clock. So like an hour before the race. That's going to be absolutely crucial. I think it could really change the complexion of this race because there's a couple of horses in here that would not be helped by plenty of rain. And the Japanese horses, I don't follow Japanese racing all that closely because, you know, we have so much of it here and who's got the time. But my impression always is that those horses have been racing for the most part on a fastish surface. And this could be a very new experience for them. And they're untried on it. And, you know, that's always at least a question mark in my mind. The potential source of value for me, if there is one in the race, is Alan Kerr, who I gather has more or less been committed to the race for a few weeks now. Obviously, you know, he'd have plenty of ground to make up on a horse like Hurricane Lane from the Grand Prix de Paris, but he was given a lot to do that day. I think, you know, maybe the jockey would like another go at riding that race if he could. We saw at Royal Ascot the time before that he just rolls straight through the mud. You know, very good run over too short a trip behind Mishriff at York the last time we saw him. So he's a three-year-old getting the weight from the older horses. You know, I think if it does come up mud, you know, Alan Carr, you know, he's 25 to 1 just now. I think maybe even 33s in places. You know, that's not a bad way to go if you don't want to be taking short odds about one of the obvious ones.
I'm glad we're speaking from the same hymn sheet. I backed Alan Kerr anti-post for this race at the start of the season. Nothing impressive. In fact, I think I've got 25 to 1, so he's even bigger now in one place. But
you've got to go in again.
Yeah, perhaps. And I've covered both my bases, really, because if Longchamp don't get the rein, then I've got Tiona, who I had a couple of sneaky quid on before the Vermeij. But I wouldn't be surprised if the ground goes against her. Tom, an each way fancy from you?
You know, I'm not an each way punter, and people are going to try. Okay, this is my own point of view, and this may get a backlash, but I don't know why you would try and find a bigger price in a race like this. There's no value, in my opinion, with the bigger price horses. We know a lot about them already. Like, I know Chris has made his case for Alan Kerr, but he's got lengths to find with Hurricane Lane, Adyar, and you then, if you're playing each way, you've got one position. If the two Godolphin horses run up to their form. I think the race is just about the top four in the market and therefore picking the winner. And I think Adyar is just that.
Okay. If you had to pick one horse to discard, one horse you don't like in the race, who would that be, Chris?
Oh, boy.
We're asking the tough questions on today's podcast.
I mean, it's probably Hurricane Lane because, I mean, I admire him. And you couldn't be surprised if he did manage to win. I think that's a sort of suboptimal preparation, isn't it? You know, having a testing experience in the Ledger just 3 weeks before.
Okay, I'd go for Snowfall for what it's worth. I still think we got a bit over.
Oh, no. Oh, Maddie, no? I do.
Do you not agree?
Well, I mean, I'm half in love with Snowfall anyway, but I think, you know, she's a potential source of value because people are looking at the disappointing run last time in the tactical race on fast ground. And I would expect to see her show that you will see a much better Snowfall this weekend. Whether it's quite enough to win the race, I couldn't be sure.
She definitely had excuses last time, but I just think form, some of those fillies only races, although, you know, they've not worked up terribly. I'm not sure this won't be a huge task. Anyway, it's not about me, Tom. What about you?
No, I'm with you, Maddie. Snowfall would be the one I'd get rid of as well. I mean, not get rid of, but discard. I wouldn't want to be playing Snowfall. She's obviously a much better price than before her last run, but it takes a real good filly to win this race. Obviously, Enable, Trev. I don't think Snowfall's necessarily in that calibre. She's still a very good filly, don't get me wrong, but she's up against a couple of really smart colts and Tarnawa. It's a red-hot renewal. I don't think Snowfall's going to be winning it this year.
Okay, any other long shot fancies before we move on to this week's naps? I'm just going to pause and hope one of you jumps in.
I was looking at value for the Kedran. I think you can get about 10 to 1 just now. I thought, you know, it looks like being quite a hot race, but she's got an interesting progressive profile. She won an Arc weekend, didn't she, last year? Beaten only
Which
by
horse, September. Chris?
Value, I said, didn't I?
Ah, sorry.
Again, value. Maybe you thought I was saying value. There is value in value. That's how to remember. She won the Chardonnay, didn't she, in Art Weekend last year, and then she was beaten only by Subjectivist in the French Ledger. And lightly raced this year, but did well at Deauville over too short a trip behind Rabia last time.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And you're right, I probably did get confused. Apologies about that. Tom, any thoughts on the other races? You know, great juvenile races, the Lagardère, the Marcel Boussac, we've got the Foray, you've got the Cadran, as Chris touched upon.
Yeah, I haven't had a massive look at Longchamp just yet, aside from the Arc. The one horse that I would be keen to keep an eye on is Glass Slippers in the Abbey. She was really unlucky to lose the race last year to Woodard, beating just a neck. I think she's run really well in all three subsequent starts, obviously one at Keeneland. Brilliant rubber, Tom Eaves in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Finished third at Goodwood behind Swayzer, who will reoppose in the Abbey and is likely to go off favourite. But Glass Slippers was coming back off a 265-day break. Wouldn't have been primed for that with later targets this year. And then last time in the Flying Five, she did the best of the horses that raced on the speed. Pace collapsed that day. She still managed to finish third. I think she's got a good chance of winning the Abbey, potentially overturning Swayzer, albeit Swayzer's a very talented rival, but Glass Slippers is double the price or triple the price, I think.
And it's always the draw, isn't it, in that race? Yeah, exactly.
Well, you want to be drawn towards the inside for Glass Slippers?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I must admit, I think she's a really underrated sprinter, Glass Slippers. I might be joining and following Tom in on that one. Right, now it's time to get this week's naps. Hopefully, we can bolster your bank balance ahead of a great day's racing on Sunday.
This will not be beaten.
So, Chris, I'll let you go first. Who are you looking forward to seeing this week?
I'm just taking a little bit of a flyer on Aidan's plans, but I'm kind of hoping that Empress Josephine will turn up in the Sun Chariot. She obviously won the Irish Guineas earlier in the season, did a couple of really disappointing runs, but much better again in the Matron last time on ground that would have been dry enough for her. And that was at a time when the yard was going through their little lull. If she turns up in the Sun Chariot this weekend on rain-softened ground, I think she's a really big runner, and the market doesn't seem to be all that interested in her just now. Of course, that may mean that they're going to send over Mother Earth or something else. So you kind of have to wait to see what gets declared on Thursday.
Yeah, that's the 2:55 at Newmarket on Saturday. Crazy that it's a Group 1 and we haven't even had time to discuss it. But there's Chris's thoughts ahead of the next stage in that Kingdom of Bahrain Sun Chariot Stakes. And Tom, yourself?
Well, Chris has provided the value tip. I'm going to hopefully provide the banker tip at shorter price, much shorter price. Mr. Allen in the 2:10 at Ayr tomorrow, Tuesday. George Bowie's 29 for 142 with his 2-year-olds this year. Really good record. Sends this Ulysses colt on a 13-hour round trip up to Ayr from Newmarket. He's the only runner for Bowie on the card. I think that's pretty crucial. He took money on his debut in a Yarmouth Maiden that is working out extremely well. Yarmouth Maidens, by the way, sub point, are very good. They always work out really well. The winner of that race was New Science, obviously won a listed race since. Solario winner, Reach of the Moon was second. The third, fourth, fifth, sixth have all won since. Mr. Allen finished seventh after showing up well for a long way. I think he's a banker. We've got him projected at 2-1. I think he's odds on shot. Hopefully he gets quoted at 2-1 and I'll be having a little wager there.
Okay, that's for Ammo Racing. They, of course, won the Rockfell Stakes on Friday with Hello You, so they'll be hoping for more success with Mr. Allen. And you were quite keen to mention that, weren't you? You said to me, don't forget to ask me about the nap.
Yeah, I am keen. I think the last time I was on here, I had a winner like with my best bet. And normally, I fail to produce the winners with these weekly naps on these Monday podcasts. So
you're not supposed to say that.
No, I'm just honest, very honest. Hopefully, Mr. Allen will produce the goods tomorrow. I'm pretty confident with him.
Maddie, okay. since we're talking about Ayr tomorrow, can I give a mention for Dancing to Win from Hugo Palmer's yard? I think it's a couple of races after Tom's tip. It's something that I've noticed that Hugo hardly ever sends horses to Ayr, but he's got a great strike rate with the ones he does send. And this is a sort of hopefully a progressive filly on just her second handicap start. I think she'll be well worth a look. I mean, she's going to be favourite, but I think she's got a few pounds in hand.
That's the 3:20 at Ayr, Dancing to Win for Ben Curtis and Hugo Palmer, Chris's mention there. That's all we've got time for on today's show. Thank you to Chris, Tom and all of you for joining us. Hope you have a fantastic weekend and we'll see you next week to review everything that happened at Longchamp. Bye-bye.